कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपी जना वल्लभा गिरिवर धारी यशोदानंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीरावन चारी यमुना तीरावन चारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी यशोदानंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीरावन चारी यमुना तीरावन चारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर शत श्री श्रीमद हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस इसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी शिल प्रभुपाद की जय अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जय ग्रंथराज श्रीमद भागवतम की जय ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्री श्री गुरु एंड गौरंगा नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत् नष्टप्रायेषु भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्टिके ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 6 चैप्टर 9 टेक्स्ट 33 दिस वर्स इज लॉन्ग सो इट्स नॉट ऑन द बोर्ड दिस इज द चैप्टर कॉल्ड द अपीयरेंस ऑफ द डीमन वृत्रसुर एंड द डेमिगॉड्स आर ऑफरिंग प्रेयर्स नाउ द लॉर्ड हैज अपीयर्ड इन फ्रंट ऑफ देम दिस इज टू लाउड परम करुणा कैन यू कट डाउन द वॉल्यूम अ लिटिल बिट So, translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. O Supreme Personality of Godhead, O Narayana, O Vasudeva, Original Person, O Most Exalted Person, Supreme Experience, Welfare Personified, O Supreme Benediction, Simply Merciful and Changeless, O Support of the Cosmic Manifestation, Sole Proprietor of All Planetary Systems, Master of Everything, excuse me, and the Husband of the Goddess of Fortune, Your Lordship is realized by the topmost sannyasis who wander about the world to preach Krishna consciousness, fully absorbed in samadhi through bhakti yoga. Because their minds are concentrated upon you, they can receive the conception of your personality in their fully purified hearts. When the darkness in their hearts is completely eradicated and you have revealed, and you are revealed to them, the transcendental bliss they enjoy is the transcendental form of your Lordship. No one but such persons can realize you. Therefore, we simply offer you our respectful obeisances. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has numerous transcendental names pertaining to different grades of revelation to the various grades of devotees and transcendentalists. When he is realized in his impersonal form, he is called the Supreme Brahman. When realized as Paramatma, he is called Antaryami. And when he expands himself in different forms for material creation, he is called Kshirodakshayi Vishnu, Garbhodakshayi Vishnu, and Karanodakshayi Vishnu. When he is realized as Vasudeva, Sankarsana, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha, the Chaturvyuha, who are beyond the three forms of Vishnu, he is in the Vaikuntha Narayana. He is the Vaikuntha Narayana. And above realization of Narayana is realization of Baladeva, and above that is realization of Krishna. All these realizations are possible when one engages fully in devotional service. The covered core of one's heart is then completely open to receiving and understanding of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in His various forms. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chaksurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vancha Kalpataru Vyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhya Evacha Patitanam Pavane Bhyo Vaishnave Bhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. We are experiencing what we call the aftermath of festivals. The aftermath means during the festival there is so much enthusiasm and so much of energy that is put out to serve that we need a day or two to recover from it. So naturally, we're all human beings. We have limited strength and we're recovering. Therefore, it's very skeleton participation. So we'll need a few more days to recover before the next range of festivals, then recover, then the range of festivals, then recover, like that. The demigods, if we read carefully, we'll notice that the prayers that they offer are different from the prayers that the residents of Vrindavan offer. Especially in the 10th canto, the gopis offer a particular set of prayers to Krishna. They're called the Gopi Gita, in which they glorify Krishna very differently. They glorify Krishna from the perspective of a loving relationship, that how he is playing with their hearts, how he's playing with their sentiments and emotions. And sometimes he seems so heartless. Sometimes they chastise him. Sometimes they plead him. Sometimes they cry for him, etc. And here, the devatas are offering different kinds of prayers. O Supreme Personality of Godhead, O Narayana, O Vasudeva, O Most Exalted Person, etc. These are prayers offered in great awe and reverence. Because for them, that is the conception of God. The Vrindavan Krishna is not revealed to them. For that matter, Vrindavan Krishna is not revealed to anyone and everyone. It's the most intimate form of Krishna. So God has many features. Primarily we say three features. One, as the omnipresent entity in every molecule and atom of creation, he exists. He's everywhere. That is the existential truth about him. And therefore, that feature is called Brahman. Then within the material world, for the material world to move, he is in the heart of every living entity and is in every atom of existence. Because an energy of Krishna does not exist independent of the energetic. They're always together, which is always true. Energy doesn't exist independent of energetic. So energy and energetic are always together. So Paramatma is always there in every atom, without which the atoms don't have their properties as atoms, without which chemical combination is not possible, without which physical combination is not possible, without which the transformation within the universe is not possible. If you bring together one atom of hydrogen and two atoms of hydrogen, one atom of oxygen, they combine to become water. Without Paramatma's presence, that chemical combination is not possible. The atoms that move, the electrons that move from one atom to another to form a bond, nothing will work. So if we don't say that matter is conscious, but that matter has certain properties. And those properties arise because of the presence of Paramatma, by which we can do things. Water has certain properties. If you put it on fire, it boils at 100 degrees centigrade, 100 Fahrenheit actually. Or you have water and you freeze it, you put it into a refrigerator or a freezer, and at 0 degrees centigrade, it freezes into solid. These are all properties. Water has another property. It's called the anomalous property, by which it expands and contracts against physical phenomena. Anyway, that's... But it's all because of Paramatma. Then there is that feature of God, which as Paramatma, he observes and sees everything. That's the first verse of Bhagavatam, correct? Anvayad itaratash charteshu abhigya swarat. Directly and indirectly, he is aware of everything that happens in every atomic space of this creation. He knows everything. And because he knows everything, he is observing. And he is sanctioning any and every movement within this world. Therefore, we hear the aphorism, not even a blade of grass can move without the sanction of the super soul. He has to sanction it. Because we are energies, the material energy is also, what we say, energy, and two energies cannot interact without the presence of the energetic. So he is called Upadrashta, supervisor, and Anumanta, the sanctioner. So if you want to do something, if you want to do anything, Paramatma has to sanction it. If I want to pick up this book, Paramatma has to sanction. If I want to get up and leave, Paramatma has to sanction. And for the whole karmic reactions to come into our lives, without Paramatma's sanction, they can't come. Time energy doesn't move without the sanction of the personality of Godhead. The time energy movement, we can't notice. Anyone notice how time moves? No. The only way you can notice is by the movement of the sun. Then you can say, oh, another day gone. I haven't been Krishna conscious. Another day gone. I still want to be Krishna. Another day gone. Will I ever be Krishna conscious? Another day gone. Maybe this is not for me anymore. That's how the time moves. Yat chakshuresha savita sakala grahana raja samasta suramurti rashesha teja. That the sun is considered to be the eye of the Lord. And he is the master of all the other planets, because all planets derive energy from the sun. And the sun himself derives energy from Krishna, Paramatma particularly. And yasya agnaya brahmati sambhrita kala chakra. Yasya agnaya, agnaya means by his permission. By Krishna's permission, the wheel of time moves. Govindam Adipurusham Tamaham Bhajami. So very, very powerful. Krishna is unbelievably powerful. Especially when he is Paramatma, sitting in everyone's heart, directing and understanding every desire, thought that arises. How our karmic reaction has to so perfectly come to us. Can anyone design a karmic system by which everyone gets exactly what they should get, when they should get it, where they should get it, in such a way that there is perfect justice at all times to all living entities? It's not possible. Now, beyond all of these great powers and potencies, which Krishna says are but a minute fraction of his actual glory, right? The very last verse of the 10th chapter, after he's described how fantastic he is, he says to Krishna, whatever beautiful and whatever wonderful you see in this universe and creation, oh Arjuna, is nothing but a tiny fraction of my real opulence. So what is his real opulence? If everything, all this fantastic things is not really something to worry about, what is his real opulence? His real opulence is how, although he being the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is very eager to serve his own devotees. This is something that is very inconceivable. That Krishna wants to serve his devotees. And he doesn't miss an opportunity to serve. We miss many opportunities. In fact, we have to be reminded. But Krishna doesn't miss an opportunity to serve his devotees. And he always glorifies his devotees. And he has this capacity to love that is so unimaginable. Part of the capacity to love is the unconditional nature of Krishna. We can check for ourselves within our own hearts whether our love for anyone, including ourselves, is unconditional. We'll find that it is not. We suffer from envy. We suffer from envy for our own self. We suffer from envy for anyone else. And our ability to give love is very constrained. Why? Because we have this material body by which we identify everything as I and mine. And when we think of mine, we're very constrained. Because how many things can we say are mine? Even if I have a long list, still that list is very small compared to almost 7 billion people on the planet. I can't say my family and a few people around here and there. That's about it. I can't say anything belongs to me particularly. My ability to give is very, very constrained. Krishna has this glory that he can give unconditionally, unlimitedly for eternity and never feel a shortage of anything. That is his nourishing nature. His love is very nourishing. In fact, it's true even in this material world, where we say the true, unconditional, pure love doesn't exist. What it means is, whatever exists is a perverted reflection of the actual love that Krishna has and we have for him. It's a perverted reflection. And even in this world, this so-called love has such power. Right? When two people are in love, what kind of things do they do? Wow! They take great risks. They defy borders, right? National borders. They defy religious borders. Right? They defy social conventions. We know all these examples, right? For India and Pakistan are severe enemies, but a boy from India or a girl from India can fall in love with the other side, the Muslim guy. It's possible. It has happened. So love is very potent, that it can break all barriers. Yet, this love is very material. But Krishna's love is not like that. So this great opulence is that he can exchange love in a very, very amazing sort of way. And is inviting all of us. So depending on how he exchanges his love, he has many names. So that's the first line. That God, in one sense, has no names. How can you name God? At the same time, there are certain names depending on his activities. So we understand that God has two categories of names. First category is called secondary category, and then there are the primary categories of names. The secondary categories do not speak about him particularly. They talk about his position as God. They're indirect, such as the Almighty, such as the Omnipresent, the Omniscient, the Lord of all Lords, the Cause of all Causes, etc. These are indirect. They indicate the Godhood nature of him, of his. Like Allah, the Lord, Yahweh, Bhagavan. Then the primary names are those that bring about intimacy. That intimacy is because of his exchanges with his devotees. Nanda Nandana, Yashoda Nandana, Braja Jana Ranjana, Yamuna Tiravanachari, Jai Radha Madhava. Madhava means, there are two meanings of Madhava. One, Madhava means the husband of the goddess of fortune, Madhavi. Another is that he was a descendant in the line of a king called Madhu. So he's called Madhava. Like that. Radha Damodar. Damodara. The name came because he was tied up by Yashoda Devi. Or he was tied up by Radharani also. So these are primary names that are on the basis of relationships. And Prabhupada almost gives us a hierarchy of realization of the personality of Godhead. The hierarchy is, first, one understands the all-pervasive Brahman feature of the Lord. It's impersonal. But the Brahman understanding is that everything is around us is energy of God. It's divine in that sense. And nothing in this world is superfluous or useless. Unlike modern medicine, where if they see any problem with an organ, they tell us it's not necessary anymore. Chop it off. So they remove gallbladder. They remove the appendix. They remove the uterus. They remove the stomach. They remove stuff that they think is useless, not useful anymore. There is nothing in this universe that is useless. Everything has its place and everything has a purpose. And Brahman realization is to see oneself beyond the limitations of the body and mind. To see oneself as spirit, spiritual. And to see everything also as spiritual is Brahman realization. It brings everything to a platform of what we say oneness. Otherwise, on the material platform, there is so much variety that oneness is not observable. True? We see oneness in the family, in the sense that we all have the same last name. So we're all one in that sense. Then there is oneness because we all belong to a particular city. We all belong to a particular nation. We all belong to a particular race, ethnicity. We all belong to a particular country. And higher than that is we all belong to a planet, fellow earth citizens. Then what? But we still make distinctions of humans, animals, birds, insects, bee, all that. But as Brahman realization is, one goes beyond all of those forms to find, to understand that within all of us is the same spirit. We're all one in the sense that we're all spiritual beings. In fact, the source is also spiritual. So there is oneness. That's the first understanding. Then, see it as an inverted pyramid. Or see it as a pyramid and then there's the inverted pyramid, however you want to see it. There is distinction and variety in this material world. And the Brahman realization brings us to the point of oneness in spiritual nature. And beyond Brahman is again distinction and variety within that oneness. Therefore, our understanding is that there is simultaneous oneness and difference. Because this world is a perverted reflection of the spiritual world. There are birds, trees, animals, insects, reptiles, persons, etc. in the spiritual world. And we see the same reflection here, but perverted. That mirror of reflection is materialistic desire. It's called karma. And because of karma, the reflective surface is full of mode of passion and ignorance. So we have everything distorted. So beyond that, Brahman is then the realization that not only am I spiritual, I also have Krishna sitting in my heart, guiding me. It particularly is called super soul, antaryami. Is guiding and watching everything. So this is where, from oneness, the distinction comes that there are two. Both are spiritually one, qualitatively, but distinct at the same time. One's identity becomes beyond the oneness. Now, by the way, that is very important. Otherwise, there is a problem with thinking that I am the Supreme. Because we have to have identity. Without identity, we cannot survive. If you ask any one of us, do you have an identity? We say, yeah, I have an identity. I have a name by which I'm identified. I have a last name by which the identification becomes specific. Like in America, there are how many Johns are there? Hundreds. How many Jeremys are there? Hundreds. So you go to India, how many Rajesh and Satish are there? Hundreds. And in fact, a lot more because there are more than 1 billion people there. So you have a last name that identifies. Radharaman Prabhu is Rajesh Sharma. If you go to India, there are thousands of Rajesh Sharmas. So then you have to have father's name associated with that. So then you start making it individual, because that's our identity. So to have identity is natural for the soul. But if my identity is, I'm everyone, that's a little problematic. Who are you? I'm everyone. Are you Rakta? Yes. Are you Veronica? Yes. Oh, you're both? Yes. Are you this? Yes, I'm that also. Whoa, that's a little confused. So identity means individual. And that individual, along with being individual, there is a commonness. I'm a human being, and so are we all. Like that. Then beyond all of this is, here Prabhupada writes, that if you go beyond Karno, Dakshai, Vishnu, within the material realm, and you come to where everything comes from, you come to Krishna. From the Chaturvyuha, to Lord Narayana, to Baladeva, to Lord Krishna. Now that Krishna is very different. Here we hear the beautiful description of himself. He has 16 attendants. He is standing in dazzling yellow garments. I think 8 arms is how he appeared to these people. And beautiful helmet that is shining. Sri Vatsa Mark, Kaustubha jewel. And so opulent that it evokes great awe and reverence. And that is the Narayana feature, where his majesty, his opulence is so strong that one is just awed by it. And beyond the Narayana form, in the Vaikunthas, is the sweet personal form of Krishna. Who doesn't dress up so opulently? He dresses up in yellow silken cloth, wears garland made of forest flowers, simple turban with a few flowers here and there, a lily stuck in his ear, resting on his ear, playing the flute, and, you know, running around strolling and frolicking with the boys. And he allows one an entrance into those sweet personal pastimes. So how does one get there? One gets there through, here's written, all these realizations are possible when one engages fully in devotional service. Now, engaging fully in devotional service also has certain moods by which that particular feature of Krishna is revealed. For example, in our own understanding, if we come to Krishna in a very inimical way, angrily at Krishna, then Krishna reciprocates back like that. The demons were very angry. They wanted to kill Krishna. So he appeared in front of them as death. Some people want to serve Krishna in this way, and he appears to them in that way. Some people want to serve Krishna in that feature as the Supreme Personality, and he appears that way. So that fully engaged in devotional service, that entrance is by the mantra one chants. If we chant the mantra of Krishna as the personality in Vaikuntha, that is the form that will be revealed to us. If we chant about Krishna as the sweet resident of Vrindavan, the maintainer and enjoyer with the gopis of Vrindavan, that is how he will reveal himself. Sometimes we ask, you know, why this set of Vaishnavas chant this mantra, that set of Vaishnavas chant that mantra. It is the mood and feature in which they want to approach Krishna. Therefore, we don't chant other mantras. Not that they are not valid. They're very valid. But we are hoping that the Krishna that will reveal himself to us is the Vrindavan Krishna, not the Vaikuntha Narayana. Of course, if he decides to show up, definitely we'll be very grateful. But we want to develop a love, a relationship with Krishna in sweetness, because we are followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Lord Chaitanya is bringing a specific gift though, where Krishna reveals his most intimate nature and his most intimate self. This is a specific gift that Lord Chaitanya is giving. He's not just revealing God. He's revealing Krishna in the most personal, intimate feature as the resident of Vrindavan. And how the residents of Vrindavan realize and interact with him. So this is very special. Therefore we chant Hare Krishna mantra. We don't chant Om Namo Narayanaya. That's not our mantra. Is that a valid mantra? Oh, very valid. Ours is called the 32 syllable mantra. And there are the 16 syllable, the 8 syllable mantras. And they all reveal the Lord in different features. So Om Namo Narayanaya is valid Vaishnava mantra. It's not for our line. Like Vishnu Sahasranama Stotra. Thousand names of Vishnu. Very valid stotra. We don't necessarily recite that. Not because we don't like Vishnu or anything. No. Very much. We're servants of Vishnu. We're called Vaishnavas. But the feature that we want Krishna to reveal to us is very specific. Therefore we chant Hare Krishna Mahamantra. Because Lord Chaitanya told us that through the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, Krishna in Vrindavan is revealed. So that relationship is what we want with Krishna. Therefore we worship Radha Krishna. We don't worship Lakshmi Narayana. Of course we approach them in the mood of Lakshmi Narayana, so we don't make offenses and mistakes or take them casually or callously. Because the mood of Vrindavan is such that everything is casual with Krishna. No one recognizes that he's God. They chastise him, they punish him, they tease him, they get angry at him, etc. We cannot come up to Kishore Kishori and say, today no food for you because I'm upset with you. That would be tough. We worship them as Lakshmi Narayana in that same awe and reverence. But our worshipable deities are Radha and Krishna, because that's the Vrindavan feature of Krishna with Radharani. Very important to know these things. Sometimes people ask us, why you chant this mantra or not that mantra? Especially when you meet people from India, they will ask, what's the problem? Why can't you chant that mantra? Why am I supposed to chant Hare Krishna only? This is why. Very exclusively, Krishna in Vrindavan is revealed. And there is a process by which Krishna is revealed. The process is of reciprocity. That is, the more we develop our service attitude towards Krishna, the more Krishna reveals his features. Atasi Krishna namadina bhavet grahyam indriyer. Our blunt material senses cannot perceive anything about Krishna. In fact, not even the Brahman feature can be perceived. If you tell someone, you're not this body, that's a very, very big statement for them. In fact, they can't even believe it. So what to speak about Krishna in the first place? Yeah? So, sevan mukhehi jivadav. Sevan Mukha means with an attitude of service, beginning with the tongue. The tongue means there are two functions of the tongue, one for things to go in and one for things to come out. To go in would be what we ingest, food. It should be only prasadam of Krishna. So the tongue gets character. Right now our tongues don't have character. How do we know our tongues don't have character? Because we eat all sorts of things. There's no sense of discrimination, no sense of class. Nothing sophisticated. It's very, very crude. Crude in the sense, we are so attracted by the flesh of other living entities. So that's very unsophisticated. But sophisticated means that the different tastes are awakened. And we can eat in such a way that it causes no harm to anyone, or causes very minimal harm to anyone. In fact, it should benefit others. That's only possible in prasadam. When Krishna's Krishna's offered bhoga, all living entities that were involved in it become benefited. The plants, the vegetables, the vegetation, etc., the cows because of ghee, the etc. Everything gets benefited. The cook, the person offering, the person eating, the person distributing, everyone's benefited. So only prasadam is a thing for the tongue by which everyone can benefit. Otherwise, everyone suffers. And the second about not having character is the words we issue from our mouth. Boy, what kind of, before we became devotees, what kind of profanity came out of the mouth? Can't even imagine, right? We shudder. What we speak to others, how we speak, the language we use, the kind of things and discussions we have. Very low class. At best, you know, it is sophisticated poetry. But most poetry is about broken hearts or something, you know, something that they are suffering from. Or at best, nature. And all. But still, it's not considered high class. He says, Jivva sati da duruke vajuta. Shukadeva Goswami says that the tongue is considered the most unchaste. It is like a croaking toad that only brings about its own death, because it has nothing valuable to say for himself or anyone else in the world. And most of it is used for flattery, to flatter other people so we can get something from us. So jivhadav, and it says swayameva spurhatadaha, when Krishna reveals himself, swayameva. This is our process. Krishna decides to reveal himself to us. We can't force him. So how he reveals himself and as who he reveals himself depends upon our mood of service. We want to be the servants. We want to culture ourselves in the mood of the residents of Vrindavan, Vrajavadhu. Those personalities in Vrindavan, especially the gopis, we want to develop our love for Krishna like them. So we follow Rupa Goswami's teachings. There's a reason why we do. There's a reason why we follow Lord Chaitanya. We want to develop that. Then Krishna will reveal himself as a resident of Vrindavan. And what is the feature of love of the residents of Vrindavan? They absolutely, under any circumstances, did not care for their own benefit, even for an atomic fraction. They only considered at all times what is beneficial for Krishna. Now, this is a very, 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 very high standard of love. It is such a high standard of love that even Krishna does not know how to reciprocate with that. Can you believe that? That it can stun Krishna? There are some questions that are called stump the Swami questions, right? That's difficult ones. Like there was a question Prabhupada was asked. Can God create a stone so big and heavy that he cannot lift? Because if he does create, then he himself is not strong. And if he can lift it, then it is not as heavy. So Prabhupada was asked that question. And Prabhupada answered it, yes, he can create a stone that he cannot lift. And then he lifts it. So there are some questions called stump the Swami.
But there is Stump Krishna. The residents of Vrindavan, the gopis have such love for him that he doesn't know what to do, how to reciprocate. He just says, you please be satisfied in your service. I don't know how to reciprocate. So one devotee shared the realization that in order to reciprocate with that love of the gopis, what did the gopis do? They gave up everything for Krishna. They gave up their wealth. They gave up their relationships, their husbands. They gave up their husbands, they gave up their children also. It is described that some of the gopis used to feed their children, and when Krishna played the flute, they just left the child and ran. Please don't think of it in a material way. This is very, very unique. Of course, Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur describes that there are two features. The materialist features stayed back and the spiritual features ran. This is a little complicated. But when Krishna calls, that attraction is so strong that they ran to Krishna in the middle of night. Much worse, one can give up wealth, one can give up relationship. But what one is cannot give up so easily is their own chastity and shyness. Each one of us has a particular boundary that we don't cross. They crossed that also. Krishna forced them to do so, and they did. When Krishna stole their garments and asked them to walk out of the water with their hands raised like this, in that cold winter water, they did. And they said, my dear Krishna, we are even abandoning our shyness and chastity for you. And what did they get in return? Oh, so much insult. Everyone said, you're unchaste, you're unchaste. There's a beautiful story of Krishna in, can't remember the details. One day, Sri Krishna, he falls sick. Water has to be gotten by... he falls sick. I hope I don't mess up the details. Anyway. And so, they find out what is the best way to cure him. And the person who's acting as the doctor says, the only thing that can cure Krishna is when a chaste woman brings him water of the Yamuna. And at that moment, Radharani is being accused of being unchaste because she is supposedly the wife of Abhimanyu, one of the gopas. And Abhimanyu is always doubtful whether she really is chaste to him, because he always knows that Krishna is lurking somewhere and she's always thinking about him. So Abhimanyu has a mother, Jatila, and a sister, Kutila. Kutila's mother, Jatila's sister. Jatila and Kutila. These people are always, Jatila means knotted and Kutila means twisted. So these two are always twisted in there and knotted in their thoughts. They always suspect Radharani. They always suspect Krishna that somewhere they're tricking us and they're meeting. So they're always on guard. They make it more and more difficult for Radharani to meet Krishna. And so the whole village has been told by Jatila and Kutila that Radharani is not a chaste woman. Now Krishna wants to disprove that. That's the pastime. So they say, Krishna needs water from the Yamuna, and it has to be done in a particular way. That a pot with hundreds of holes must be immersed in the Yamuna, and you should lift it and bring it. And if a woman is chaste, then not a drop of water will fall from a pot that is full of holes, like a colander. So different women say, oh, I will bring it for Krishna, I'll bring it for Krishna. And they all pick up the water and water keeps dripping. So finally Jatila and Kutila say, we will do it. We are the most chaste ladies in Vrindavan. And when they dip their pot and pick it up, psh, all the water goes down. The only one left is Radharani. And they say, no, she is not chaste. No, she cannot do it. But then others say, no, let it be known to everyone. that she is truly unchaste, because when she picks up water, it will drip. So Radharani goes with a pot full of holes, she dips it in the Yamuna, lifts it up, not a drop of water falls. And I was like, oh, unnecessarily we have suspected her. Oh, and Jatila and Kutila seek forgiveness from her. The residents of Vrindavan have given everything up for Krishna. Even the reputation, which is the most sacred one. We will do anything to not tarnish our reputation. That's very sacred to us. Even that was completely taken away from them by Krishna, and they happily gave it. So to reciprocate with that, this devotee was expressing that because they renounced everything, Krishna appeared as a renunciate, as Lord Chaitanya, and he renounced everything. Just to reciprocate with, wow, they have done that, I will do that for them. And the whole time that he was manifest here, not only did he live as a renunciate, he only glorified the residents of Vrindavan. That is how he reciprocated back as Krishna. So Prabhupada writes, the covered core of one's heart is then completely open to receiving and understanding of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his various forms. That core is who we are, the soul proper. And that core of one's heart is completely open because of the mood of service. When there is no mood of service, the heart closes. When there is mood of service, the heart opens. Shreya Kairava Chandrika Vitaranam. The heart opens like a beautiful lotus that is nourished by the moonlight. And that opening is that when we are receiving and giving to Krishna, from Krishna and back to Krishna. Therefore we chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra to understand who we are, what is our relationship with Krishna, and who is Krishna. Very adventurous, fantastic process that we have been invited to, we have been gifted without any qualification. We were not even looking for it. In fact, we were running away from it. Still, somehow or the other, by the wonderful grace of Lord Chaitanya and his followers, we are here. Any questions or comments? Nandi Shakti, that's the hand I saw first, then Paramakur. Yes, go ahead, speak up. Loud and clear. The more we develop the mood of service, Krishna will reveal himself. Yes.
How does he reveal himself?
How does he reveal himself? In the best way that we can see him and feel him and understand him.
Depending on the person.
Depending upon the intensity and quality of our mood of service. Ultimately, yes, he will reveal himself as the Vrindavan Krishna. But part of that, here Prabhupada writes, the covered core of one's heart is then completely open to receiving and understanding of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his various forms. So, as our mode of service is developing, there are certain things that we need Krishna to reveal himself as the protector, the nurturer, the loving one, the all-powerful, whatever, different ways, the maintainer. And progressively he'll reveal himself. Because from the beginning to that end, we need from him certain things as assurances. And beyond that, we don't need anything. We only are ready to give. Without any assurance of anything in return. Correct? Sikshashtaka, verse number 8. I know it's one of your favorite verses. Aslisyava padaratam pinashtuma. Marmahatam karotuva. Even if you break me broken hearted, crush me, it doesn't matter. That is yet to come. But we need sometimes assurance of Krishna. Oh, you're there. And I'm being taken care of. Or I need a particular realization about myself, about life in general. So Krishna reveals himself as realization, as a relationship with the devotees, as the power of Srimad Bhagavatam, as the taste for chanting, the taste of devotional service. Those are all manifestations of Krishna in different forms. Finally, himself, his qualities, right? Name, form, qualities, activities, etc. Some quality of Krishna becomes very attractive to us, and we start developing our life according to that quality of Krishna. Then certain devotees of Krishna. That's Rupa Goswami's roadmap of development of bhakti, ragatmika. We get inspired by a particular devotee in a particular rasa to Krishna, and we follow that. That's way there, but wherever it is, that's the roadmap. Is that okay? Krishna reveals different ways. Since we're talking about Vrindavan, you told keep the mic close to you.
You told that we have been worshipping Sri Kishora Kishori as a Lakshmi Narayan in awe and reverence. But every day when we wake up in the morning, which is called Vedic Ragatmika Bhakti, it's guide us to the spontaneous attachment.
Right.
So how this thing matches awe and reverence and spontaneous attachment. So let me finish. So can we serve Sri Kishore Kishori, or we are offering the food in the mood that we are giving to Radha and Krishna, or we are to serve like with the awe and reverence only?
Well, we serve with awe and reverence where we invite them to come and sit. Idam asanam, idam argyam, idam padyam, idam achamaniyam, a whole formal procedure of offering. And then when we offer, we leave the room, we chant Gayatri, we come back, we offer our obeisances again and again. It's all in a formal mood of awe and reverence. Although it is Radha and Krishna, but their Radha and Krishna features not fully revealed to us yet. So Prabhupada said it should in the mood of Lakshmi Narayana. Of course they're Radha and Krishna. We don't say that this is Lord Narayana in that sense. But the mood is of awe and reverence so that there is respect. Otherwise, familiarity will set in to such a degree that we become casual with Krishna. That familiarity should not be there. The familiarity comes out, you know, even Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, when the Virata Rupa was revealed, what was Arjuna's first reaction? Wonderment, and fear, and immediately offers prayer saying, I'm very sorry, I called you, hey Yadava, hey Krishna, and we sat on the same bed, we ate from the same plate, and I'm very sorry, please forgive me. Because when there is awe and reverence, there is respect. And that respect is proper, so we follow the rules and regulations according to Vaidhi Bhakti, which will develop a sense of intimacy with the deities, with Krishna. Then love develops. Suppose there is a master, a very, very rich, powerful personality, and we get to meet with them for the first time. Are we careful or not? Or we will stand up when they come, we'll serve them nicely. And when we start serving them over time, we get to know what they like, what they don't like, what their habits are like, etc. And even they start trusting us, so they joke with us a little bit, there's more intimacy. Then we can say certain things, we cannot say certain things. It develops with the relationship. Even with the king, the ministers are all there. And as the trust develops with the king, the ministers are able to express certain things which otherwise they would be afraid to express. But as intimacy develops, then the guards come down a little bit. Now when we're serving the spiritual master, for example, we serve in a personal way, right? In the beginning it's like, but you start serving more closely, then it goes down a little bit. But we should always be careful. If it goes down so much that we start thinking he's our buddy, finished. Maharaj, sing this song. Like that. It's happened. We cannot. Prabhupada said, no sakhya ras with guru. Always dasya. There's no friend. Friendly, but no friend. So Krishna is also like fire. Prabhupada said, you're playing with fire. If you become careless and casual, you're playing with fire. It'll burn. But you learn how to interact with fire. Then you can do a lot of things. Ragatmaka bhakti has to develop naturally out of its own cause when the soul awakens. We don't force ourselves. This forcing is very wrong. It's not given by Rupa Goswami, it's not given by Bhaktis, definitely not by Prabhupada. Naturally it will develop. For example, a person who first time enters the altar area as a Brahmin, you ask them their experience, it's nerve-wracking. It's very difficult. The moment you go there, the first question that, at least I know, happened for me, and other devotees have expressed, the first feeling you get is, as if Krishna is telling you, what are you doing here? Why are you here? Like, oh, I shouldn't be here. But you do more service, and then you become a little bit more familiar, if you will, that oh, this is a space that I can be in, serving Krishna. And even if you're dressing them with so much intimacy, you're touching them, you're still, you're always careful. So they allow, but it has to develop naturally. We still dress, stand in front of them and seek forgiveness. Please forgive us if you've done anything improper, unknowingly. Offer our obeisances again and again and again. Formality is there. It's proper. Is that okay? Does that address a little bit?
Yes. The second thing, you were talking about the...
If you speak into the mic, it gets recorded. That's why.
Yeah, different inclination of different people to serve Krishna in his mood. So I was reading NOD last night, and also a different kind of submission, Lalasamai and humility, says three of them.
Dainya Udvodhika.
Samprarthanatmika. So this comes at that stage of Swarupa Siddhi. That's what is written over there particularly. So initially you told that devotee, if you want to serve in that way, Krishna will reveal that way. So let's say devotee started serving in the mood of Dasyara. So that is a Swarupa, that will be a Swarupa Siddhi then?
No. But within Dasya, Krishna will reveal himself as a very loving master, such that our attraction to serve will increase. We don't go to Krishna and say, from today I want to serve you in conjugal rasa. We get a slap on our face. But you always dasya rasa, servant. And even in dasya there are so many categorizations. The point I was making is that when people approach him as the Lord in Vaikuntha, he reveals himself as the Lord in Vaikuntha. When we chant the Hare Krishna mantra, that means we are approaching him as Krishna in Vrindavan, without fully being aware of what it means. Do we say, can anyone of us say, we fully understand the meaning of the Hare Krishna mantra? We can't say. We know that Prabhupada explained the meaning is, oh my dear Radha and Krishna, please engage me in your service. But within the Hare Krishna mantra is the... When Rupa Goswami and Raghunath Das Goswami chant, what's their realization? They are in the pastimes with Krishna. In fact, Krishna comes to serve them. Radharani came specifically to serve Raghunath Das Goswami when he was chanting. But we chant the Hare Krishna mantra because as followers of Lord Chaitanya, he is empowering us to understand Krishna as the Vrindavan Krishna. That's what I was talking about. Not that individually we say, from today this is my mood. It's not like that. From today my mood is, I want to follow Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti properly. So eventually other features of Raga Bhakti will be revealed. Bhava and Prema. We want Prema at the end of the, you know, we want Prema. That's why we're doing this. Is that satisfying? Okay. Yes. Bhaktaluk.
Hare Krishna, Guru. Thank you for the class. I was thinking about, you were mentioning, according to our mood of service, Krishna will reciprocate. So, these moods, any mood of service, but especially the moods of service exhibited in the residents of Vrindavan are very subtle and difficult to appreciate, especially for those of us coming from a conditioned state. It's like really foreign.
Right.
And then on top of that, we hear that they're also very, very rare. So how are we to verify that the mood we are cultivating actually corresponds to the mood of devotion that Lord Chaitanya, Rupa Goswami, unto Srila Prabhupada, that mood that they wanted us to receive, how are we to verify that the mood we are cultivating actually corresponds to that?
Well, the nectar of devotion gives us the whole roadmap. As I was speaking to Ladni Shakti's question, there's a roadmap. And the roadmap has certain landmarks. And as we recognize those landmarks, those are indicators that we're heading in the right direction. And you're right, just as they're very subtle, we don't enter subtle realms so easily. We still traverse through the gross aspects of things, which is called anartha nivritti, right? But for that we have sadhu sangha. There are ways by which we do sadhu sangha, there are ways by which we do bhajana kriya, etc. Such that we become aware of our anarthas. We also become aware of those anarthas going away. Can we, any one of us, say that not even one anartha has gone away? Because there is something, some progress, that's why we are continuing. It may not have been absolutely eradicated, because in anartha nivritti stage, they're not absolutely eradicated, but they say almost completely. So there are no obstacles in our serving Krishna. On a very, at least on the gross level, bad habits go away, certain refinements come in, like that. So these are landmarks. So we know that we are headed in the right direction. And we just keep continuing. And as we continue, the different landmarks that show up. If we head out in a wrong direction, there are landmarks for that also. Then we say, oh, doesn't look familiar, I'm in the wrong place. And there are these landmarks. If you see a big ditch and you see that you're falling, then you know you're in a wrong, turn back, whatever. You know? So we come back. We recalibrate, come back to that path where the landmarks are clear. Yes, you're headed in the right direction. That's it, just keep going from there. While we have our vision set on the ultimate. Right now we don't even know what that ultimate looks like or what it feels like. So we hear about it, right? For example, we don't know what the ultimate goal looks like. Someone will say, just keep following the green light. You keep going. I don't know what green light looks like. I don't know where all the circumstances where the green light looks like. All I know is there is a green light and I need to follow that. When we are lost at sea, all we need is a beacon of light from the lighthouse. Just keep following that. It's like that. Once we get there, then we see everything else. So just follow the beacon of light. The beacon of light is the principles of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. Knowing that from what Lord Chaitanya and Prabhupada have explained, we want to develop unconditional, uninhibited, absolute love for Krishna. I don't know what that means, but that's what I want. We join school, we want to graduate, get a degree, whatever. We don't know what it feels like, but that's what I want. Therefore, I'm doing what I'm doing.
I guess I, with those two analogies, as we would progress and hopefully over time, we would get closer to this destination in the distance, and it would become more clear. And also with the analogy of school, we wouldn't really have much idea, say in first grade, what is graduation, what is the purpose, what do I want to do, etc. But as we grow and go from first grade to etc., then it would become more clear. So I guess, personally, a lack of increasing clarity, for me, is a cause of concern. And vice versa, when I have increasing clarity, then I am reassured.
Always. That is true. In the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada writes that the mind is disturbed for want of a goal. If the goal is not clear, the mind is always disturbed. So even in our daily practices, we should have a goal for what, why we're doing what we're doing. And from time to time, it is discussed, is advised that we should pause and reconsider, why am I doing this? Why am I doing this? Oh, I want to develop Krishna consciousness. Oh, okay, that's the right reason. The reason we came into the temple and the reason we became devotees is not necessarily the same reason why we continue devotional life. Because we come in with distress and confusion and rejected, we didn't have a place to stay, we heard there was free food here, however, we sure. But that's not why we continue. So we have to regularly reassess and reset why we're doing what we're doing. It's very important. Otherwise, we go through Krishna consciousness at some point in time when it'll hit us, we would have drifted so far away, that'd be difficult. So it's important that regularly we have a clear idea of goal. Why are we doing this? Why am I doing this? Why am I doing this? You know, someone chastises us, let's say. Okay, or we make a mistake. And we feel very despondent. Then we ask ourselves, why am I doing this? Like, why am I in Krishna consciousness in the first place? Well, I want to develop full love for Krishna. All right. And along the path, here are some things that I have to be aware of. Yeah, okay. Well, then it then says it makes worth it because the other end of the tunnel is prema. Okay, then it's worth it. If I don't know the purpose, then I lose it. It's like, why? Why should I face all this? What's the reason? Like that. Mind is disturbed for want of a goal. A goal must be there, must be clear. It can be smaller goals, if not the absolute ultimate goal, but smaller goal could be, I want to become purified in my heart. I want to develop proper qualities for serving Krishna. Something. I want to learn the Bhagavatam, even if people chastise me. Alright, I want to hear the Bhagavatam, however. But there's all these small goals are attached to the ultimate goal. But the goal should be clear. Otherwise, can't last. Enthusiasm and goal are very clearly connected. If the goal is clear, enthusiasm is clear. It's there. If the goal is not clear, enthusiasm vanishes. Said it differently, enthusiasm is nourished on the basis of a spiritual conception. You have a material conception, enthusiasm vanishes. Because material conception sees things in duality. So you have a spiritual conception. Enthusiasm is always alive. Thank you. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Gaur Premanand. So for those of you who missed the morning announcement, today is the Vyasa Puja of His Holiness Gopal Krishna Goswami. Vishwakarma Prabhu and Paramakarna Prabhu's spiritual master, and I'm sure the other devotees. So in the evening, they've invited us, all of you, all of us, whether you're here, online, wherever you are, you're hearing it, they've invited us for Vyasa Puja celebrations at 6:30 downstairs. So after Gaur Arati, downstairs for Vyasa Puja celebration of His Holiness Gopal Krishna Goswami. Thank you. Hare Krishna.
You're fasting, right?
I'm always confused with one thing, asking the same question to Jai Jagannath in the kitchen. If you keep belly, everything is in neutral state, very vertical, but down. Then, from Pradhan, interaction of time occurs and Mahatattva. Is it conscious or unconscious?
Well, always I'm not conscious.
So, Mahatattva, what do you think about that? Ingredients with that?
Separate of that, sir. Starts pradhan se mahatvatva mein things start getting agitated and separated.
At that time Krishna glances or after that Krishna glances?
Without glance how things can agitate.
Okay. So
think of a man and woman and conception. Okay? As long as conception doesn't happen, the woman has this normal menstrual cycle. Okay? The moment conception happens, the sperm, that is the egg, kya hota hai? Hormonal change of that. Right? She stops having her period, everything is nourished. From then, within 40 weeks, so many changes happen. And then, 40 weeks later, the kid is born. So, that gestational period is where the Mahatpradhan becomes Mahatattva and gets agitated. And one thing after the other starts separating and developing. And then the whole Brahmanda appears.
So, when the living entity gets. The living thought and living entity come into existence.
Conception, like what? The sperm goes, right?
Yeah, agitation.
So that's the word. That's conception. Okay. So living entities are all.